WSLR LP 96.5 in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 in Bradenton. This is Della Hale with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, December 12th. Ashley Benfield, a former ballerina sentenced to 20 years in prison for the 2020 shooting death of her estranged husband, Doug Benfield, is now seeking a release on bond while her case is under appeal. Benfield, who claims she acted in self-defense during a confrontation at her home, was convicted of manslaughter in September. Her attorneys argue that her appeal raises significant legal questions that could result in a new trial justifying her release. The case, which drew national attention due to the couple's tumultuous relationship, included allegations of domestic abuse and competing narratives about what led to the fatal shooting. A judge recently denied Benfield's motion for a new trial, intensifying efforts to seek bond. The Sarasota School Board closed out its final meeting of 2024 with discussions on several pressing topics, reflecting the district's focus on managing rapid growth and planning for future needs. Among the highlights was the selection of a name and mascot for Welland Park High School, a highly anticipated addition to the district scheduled to open in 2025. Rezoning efforts also dominated the conversation, specifically addressing the Sky Ranch K-8 project. This new school is designed to reduce overcrowding in existing facilities, an issue exacerbated by the county's population growth. Additionally, board members debated reducing the frequency of their meetings in 2025 to streamline the processes and enhance productivity. This proposal has sparked differing opinions. The meeting underscored broader concerns about school capacities, student transitions, and long-term planning for one of Florida's fastest-growing areas. In a significant move to expand recreational and competitive sports facilities, the Manatee County Commission has approved a $44.2 million budget for the new Racquet and Aquatic Center at the Premier Sports Campus in Lakewood Ranch. The state-of-the-art facility is set to feature both competition and therapy swimming pools, providing vital resources for athletes and the community alike. The center will also include 24 pickleball courts, 14 of which will be covered to ensure year-round play, even in inclement weather. The comprehensive development will also provide much-needed amenities, including administration offices, restrooms, and locker rooms, making it a full-service venue. The project is slated to take just over a year and a half to complete, with an expected opening by 2026. This has been Della Hale with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, December 12th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, here in Sarasota and neighboring counties, we are fortunate to have Healthy Start. Healthy Start is a coalition that helps pregnant women and new families before, during, and after pregnancy. Healthy Start strives to provide new families with the resources and support they need to have safe and healthy pregnancies and to give parents the tools required to ensure that all babies in Sarasota County get the healthy start they deserve. I cannot think of a more worthy cause when things are well with mothers and babies and families. Things are right with the world, I think. And so joining me today is Dr. Washington Hill. Dr. Hill is a maternal and fetal medicine OBGYN who was the former chair of Sarasota Memorial Hospital's Department of Maternal and Fetal Medicine. He has nearly 60 years of experience in
just
the field.
About, yes.
Yeah. You graduated from Temple University. And Rutgers as well. Yeah, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure, Kathy. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so grateful for the work that you do. My husband is a fan. You all were colleagues at the hospital. And I was saying to him, you know, at a time of life when a lot of people are kicking back and playing golf, you continue to stay involved in helping women have healthy babies.
Well, I first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you very much
yeah.
for invited me back again to talk about this subject and healthy mothers and healthy babies. It's just the passion that I have and that I'm trying to pass on to the younger folks in the community to continue.
Yeah. So you have practiced. How long have you been here in Sarasota?
I was invited here to start the high-risk pregnancy program. And I always remember, I never can remember exactly the date, but Pam Beitlick, who was recently elected to the board, was working at Sarasota Memorial Hospital and actually was one of the individuals who interviewed me. And I really don't remember the others, but I remember Pam because she was very pregnant. And she doesn't mind me saying that. In fact, one time I was introducing her, and Pam said, I was very pregnant. She was having twins. So she was very pregnant. And I always, from time to time, have to ask her, so how old are the twins? And I think they're 35 years old.
Wow.
So I've been here at least 35 years and was brought to develop the high-risk pregnancy program. And I think history would show that that worked out very well. But with the help of many physicians in this community who I would knock on their door and say, I got a poor lady here who has diabetes. She's got no money, and I need somebody to see her. And Dr. Ann Toons would never say no. And that brings a chill to me, and I'm sure to you, and I'm sure to Dr. Ann Toons. As well.
Just so one of the reasons I love that man.
He would never say no. And as you know, he was very, very busy. But if I had a patient who was in ketoacidosis, for your listeners, that's a kind of a bad disease when you have diabetes, he would be right there. So it's been a good ride, and I just continue. We have two other doctors now who are providing high-risk pregnancy care, and there's two out in the wings who would like to come back to Sarasota and do the same.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yes.
So aren't you also a twin?
Yes. Oh, boy.
Maybe I know too much, right?
I don't know where this conversation is going to go.
if it's okay to share it, did your mom know that she was having two? Or because medicine's come a long way.
First of all, I do have a twin. Let's say a prayer for him this morning. He has been at Hilton Head Hospital for the last couple of days with a few issues, but he'll bounce back.
Yeah.
His name is George. My name is Washington. He has visited Sarasota on several occasions and met many, and certainly many of the doctors and nurses. There are two issues. The first issue is we don't know who was first, and we don't know who was second, because in those days, some years ago, your listeners are going to say, well, don't you look at the birth certificate and look at the time? Well, in those days, folks, they put the date down, 2/19/1939, but they did not put the time. So there's two birth certificates, two different names, same date, no time. So this has created an issue.
two highly successful brothers, right?
The issue is who was first and who was second.
Who's the oldest?
Who's the oldest? The bottom line is we don't know, George, so let's get off of it and talk about something else.
Okay.
The other question was, did my mother know? And she did not. She did not know. She had the name George because that was her dad's name. And so that was how that came about. But then she said the doctor delivered a baby, and then he said, I think there's another baby in there. In those days, that was actually half the twins were diagnosed at the time of birth.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as ultrasound, folks. There was no 8-week ultrasound picture.
Right. Yeah.
A baby was delivered, and then usually a very experienced labor and delivery nurse would say, doctor, there's another baby in there.
Wow.
And sure enough, you'd reach up and there'd be some feet.
And there was another baby.
Right.
And I love your name. I think Washington Hill is such a great name, but there's
a
great story behind your name. So tell me about your efforts with Healthy Start. Why did you feel it was needed in the community when you started it? When it started?
When I started here, I think Healthy Start was just getting going through the Governor Lawton Charles. Lawton Charles daughter was a midwife.
Oh.
And through, I'm sure, her work and mm-hmm. efforts, found out that, hey, I'm delivering babies and mothers who really need some help.
Right.
I'm sure that's how it got started. And then the governor took it from there, and there's a healthy start in every county. When I came, I was invited by somebody to join the Healthy Start Coalition in Sarasota County. And the work that is done by them is so very, very important. And you mentioned it, making sure that before a pregnancy, and we'll talk about that, that a woman has a good prenatal care, if she's on drugs or not mm-hmm. on drugs or has diabetes or whatever, mm-hmm. she needs that care. And that is so very important. And then good care when she's in labor and delivery at the hospital. And the hospital, Pam and others have been just great partners. And then the after part is postpartum, because that is where actually most maternal deaths occur after a patient has delivered and through that first year of life. So
yeah.
It's that whole span that we work very hard on.
Yeah. I think if people aren't familiar, it is sobering to know that the United States really isn't doing so well with maternal mortality.
We could talk a whole hour about that, and I think we may have. Unfortunately, the maternal mortality in the United States is around 17, 18 per 100,000, and that's not good.
Yeah.
There are countries that have 5 per 100,000, and then there are countries that have Afghanistan during the war, it was like 300 per 100,000. So you can see mm-hmm. that there are countries that are doing better than us, and then the countries that are doing worse than us, and then mm-hmm. us. So why we are having issues remains a question. We can get into that. But not only is it important to realize that our overall maternal mortality rate is too high, if you break it down by race and ethnicity, it really is sobering.
Yeah.
And a black woman in this country today in Florida has a 4 times chance of dying than a white woman.
Wow. Yeah, that is sobering. And it is connected to, in part, surely the quality of prenatal care. And follow-up, right?
It's impacted by many things. One is the quality of medical care, of their prenatal care, access to that care. We all say, well, access, all they have to do is call the doctor and make an appointment. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the case, because many of these women do not have insurance mm-hmm. or are underinsured or on Medicaid. And then if a patient came to this community today and said, I'm pregnant and I need care and I have Medicaid, they would have a very difficult time of finding someone who would take care of them. It's not zero,
yeah.
but it's not the number that needs to be. So access to that care and to excellent care
mm-hmm.
and communicating with the patient is so very important.
Is transportation at all an issue?
Transportation has always been an issue and remains
yeah.
an issue. A patient has an appointment at noon, and mm-hmm. The car breaks down, and she misses the bus, and she cannot get in for her care.
Yeah,
so,
you know, because
so for sure,
I talk a lot on the show about planning issues, you know, development issues, because we focus a lot on local government, but there are real ramifications for, you know, families and their health care with transportation. There's ramifications for family income, having access to opportunity. And so there are so many things that a society has to coordinate to really optimize the health and welfare of citizens.
You are so right. And so attuned to that. And
yeah.
that is that those are called the social determinants of health, as you know,
mm.
or health-related social needs. And it's very important that whoever is caring for those patients, hospital, clinic, whoever, that they understand the patient's health-related social needs.
Yeah.
To the point where Sarasota Memorial Hospital, it's a hospital-wide program that they ask patients, what are your social determinants of health? Do you have health-related social needs? Is there something that we can do to help you?
Yeah. Florida is one of the states that has refused Medicaid expansion. And I know, as you said, even if a pregnant woman has Medicaid, she's still going to have a difficult time. Has the failure to embrace Medicaid expansion impacted maternal health and the health of babies?
The quick and simple answer is yes.
Yeah.
There's no question. And if you look at those states who did not expand Medicaid, mm-hmm. those are the states that have real issues with their maternal mortality.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Florida did not expand Medicaid. We were able to get Florida to extend the post-period time where Medicaid would cover the patient to 1 year. That was a real effort. It was before 6 weeks. Like, after 6 weeks, nothing bad happens postpartum.
But having had two children, I'm like, right.
It's exactly. Yeah. And remember what I said, most maternal deaths occur postpartum up to 1 year. So it's very important that we were able to at least expand that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, DOH and the government, Florida government, for doing that. But in terms of increasing the number of folks who come into the Medicaid program, no increase.
Yeah. You know, and I want to get to, because there's a Healthy Start conference happening on Monday,
right.
And I want to talk about that. But to kind of stay with this idea a little bit, I worked in pharmaceutical sales for 20 years. And, you know, it kind of surprised me. Well, I knew my medicines inside and out. And doctors have to know everything, right? So the fact that I knew the medicine inside and out could be a service. You know, when the system's working right, the work we did was helpful. I recognize that it can be perceived differently. And that's valid too. But one of the things I noticed, and I sold a lot of cardiac medication, was it wasn't, try as I might, there were always physicians who had their own personal ideas of what worked for their patients,
right?
And I'm not going to do Cookbook medicine, and I've never seen like a pulmonary embolism, XYZ, and I don't need to do that. And it was Medicare who came in, because Medicare, when there is a need for somebody to have the eagle eye over the healthcare system. And what Medicare did for patients with heart failure was there was well established, I sold Vasotec, and that was a drug where mm-hmm. the study was stopped early because there was such a benefit mortality wise for patients with heart failure. And now you would note it out there as enalapril, but that study was stopped early for ethical reasons. So there were clear evidence-based protocols for heart failure, and hospitals weren't necessarily discharging patients properly on these meds because you had these individual ideas. And Medicare came in and said, you follow these protocols, or you know what, hospital, we're not going to reimburse you.
Yeah.
And that, as patients, older patients have benefited. It's not just that. There are other protocols where, because somebody sees the whole picture, and, you know, 17 deaths out of 100,000 for a piece of the healthcare market is, honestly, might be they may not care about the mortality, but Medicare has a different mandate and they care. If we had single payer for mothers, I have to believe that protocols impacting maternal mortality would be enforced.
Right.
And hospitals or providers would be appropriately dinged financially if they weren't implementing those protocols. So this country's paying a price for not having a single payer viewpoint when it comes to pregnancy.
You're absolutely right. And what is very helpful is that Medicare can actually dictate what needs to be done.
Absolutely, okay? Yeah.
And in doing that, one of the things that they have done has been to say, when a patient comes in, you have to look at her health-related social needs.
Mm-hmm.
And when she goes home, you have to ask her about them and then address them.
Right.
You have to have a program. So when the Joint Commission comes through, they ask you, what are you doing to promote health equity? What are you doing? And you have to outline what you are doing. And recently, SMH mm-hmm. had their Joint Commission inspection and did very well.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. What Medicare does is it looks at the bigger picture. And if you are getting money from Medicare, which all hospitals do.
Yeah, it's a major payer usually.
It's a major payer. No one wants to lose their Medicare payment.
Right.
And therefore, you have to be doing what is best practice.
An absolutely effective and appropriate use of government.
Yes.
The role of government.
I would agree.
You know?
I would agree.
And there are people who are alive today because we have that kind of oversight with this unique data set that Medicare has, and they don't have a profit motive.
Right.
They have a health motive.
They have a health.
Yeah.
Healthy patients is what they're all about.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're familiar. The New York Times reported this week on a JAMA study that looked at rural hospital healthcare for maternity
right.
healthcare.
Right.
And what JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, reported was that 500 rural hospitals have closed, I believe, over the past 5 years, their OBGYN service.
Correct.
I mean, we've seen in Sarasota County, when I was calling on hospitals, maternal wards were closed in certain for-profit hospitals because OBGYN, delivering babies, isn't necessarily good for the bottom line. It's good for society, but not good for the bottom line. Can you comment on this trend and what's
Yeah, it's very easy to comment on it because the hospital near here that closed their maternity services is DeSoto Memorial. When I first came, there were two or three doctors out at DeSoto Memorial Hospital. We worked with them. I can remember going out and teaching the nurses at night. But then it came to be very clear that they were not doing enough deliveries to survive.
Mm.
And I want to say their services have been closed somewhere between 5 and 8 years now.
Mm.
So those folks, because people still get pregnant in Arcadia, right? They have to go somewhere for their care.
They do.
They can go to DeSoto Memorial for an emergency, and we arranged and discussed the emergency room having the ability to take care of those patients.
Yeah.
But the patients have to find another place to go. Some of them go to Port Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them go to Center Place Health in Northport. Some of them go up to MCR in Bradenton, and then some come to Sarasota Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we don't have to go far to find that the rural areas really are lacking. They're actually maternity deserts.
Yeah.
The maternity deserts, and we have to find a way and continue to find a way to get those patients the appropriate care.
Yeah, and there are some hospitals that are simply choosing to shut the ward down because
it's
not profitable, even though that there are patients coming in, right?
The maternity services themselves may not be profitable, but one has to remember that women are the ones frequently who decide which hospital is going to be used for their children,
mm-hmm.
for their husband, for themselves, for granny, et cetera. So it is important to remember that women kind of don't dictate, but they say, well, I had my baby there.
Mm-hmm.
They treated me good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good hospital. The services are there. Let's go there for the appendectomy, that type of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about women. When my sister told me a story when she was on the phone, and she was at home with two small children, and she was on the phone with a credit card company, and they were giving her, she wasn't the one making the income, right? But she was opening up a credit card and she said, you know, I don't make the income, but I control all of it. Because she truly was, you know, she was the one. That's how families work.
Right.
So we're fortunate, aren't we, with our public hospital. It is different when you've got a for-profit hospital and a public hospital. And if Sarasota Memorial weren't a public hospital, the menu of services it provides could conceivably be different. I mean, we're fortunate to have you treated high-risk pregnant women. So we have a NICU, a neonatal intensive care unit.
Right.
What does that do for the community?
Oh, it's tremendous. The public hospital that we have here is it's a gem from the standpoint of the physicians who practice here. Many of them have practiced or even could practice at academic centers. Mm-hmm. And basically, as someone reminded me, we actually do have an academic center here because we have residents in certain specialties, we have fellows in certain specialties. So the physicians bring a lot. And then the nurses, and then the whole organization of the services that are possible are here.
Yeah,
and it's a public hospital, and yes, as a public hospital, it's going to lose some money from taking care of all patients, and Sarasota Memorial takes care of everybody, regardless of their ability to pay. So we have a gem in that hospital, and I think with the election of the current board, we're going to be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, that was... Any thoughts on the election and what was going on with the hospital board?
Well, I've expressed them many times in many articles and interviews, and I think that the results that we have and those now on the board are going to move this hospital to another level. And not only the Sarasota Memorial Hospital in Sarasota, but other hospitals associated with Sarasota Memorial, like Venice and Northport and other places.
Yeah.
And not only that, the urgent care centers and the other parts of the hospital that are out in the community.
Yeah, yeah. Having worked in the pharmaceutical industry, and I called on all the hospitals between Naples and Bradenton, I was, and I had worked in Hawaii and the D.C. area and the Pittsburgh area with exceptional medical centers there. I was really struck by SMH, and this was back in the early 2000s, right, at how different it was and how it did function like an academic medical center in terms of the quality of care.
Right.
That was really impressive to me. And the stories I had been told was that you had a physician who was the CEO, Duncan Finley, who was a pulmonologist.
Right.
And they set the deliberate goal, we want to be the best hospital, maybe in Florida.
Right.
And so that was the yardstick. It was that kind of commitment to excellence, and we're all benefiting. Not that, you know, and I know... things can go wrong.
Oh, yes.
And there will be problems. It's not to say they never make a mistake. That happens. But it has been impressive.
The bar is high.
Yeah.
The bar is high for physicians.
Yes.
There are physicians who don't meet the bar and are no longer practicing.
Yeah.
The bar is high for nurses, the magnet designation that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So the bar is high for anyone who works there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone.
Yeah.
So the bar is high, and if you want to be a part of the Sarasota Memorial Healthcare System, you have to recognize that.
Yeah. Well, one of the earthquakes that happened in maternal care was the Supreme Court decision, the Dobbs decision, changing... Roe v. Wade and allowing states to impose their own standards, their own benchmarks and definitions. You've been in the field for decades.
I graduated from medical school in 1965, which was before the passage of Roe versus Wade. I graduated from medical school in North Philadelphia, and I was practicing OBGYN there. And I know what happened in 1965 to women and the choices that women had to make before Roe versus Wade. So it was certainly disappointing to me, and I think everyone in this community knows that. I've written about it and talked about it when Dobbs occurred.
You know, because the thing for me, like, I talk about my relative in Ireland, and I come from a very Irish Catholic family, and abortion was illegal in Ireland. And she was telling my aunts every weekend, there was a young woman dying because she had taken matters into her own hands, sometimes more than one. And you never hear about that from those who believe this change. It's like, where is the concern? Where is the acknowledgement that this is going to cost lives, women's lives, you know?
We will continue to look at that. CDC will look at it. One of the things that many of us do is participate in the maternal mortality review committees, which look at the death of women related to pregnancy up to 1 year. And we'll look very carefully and continue to look at maternal morbidity and mortality throughout the years in the upcoming year and what their causes may be. And I'm sure that we will see some related to what you just mentioned.
Yeah, we're hearing stories throughout the country about what happens. Everybody, if you've just joined us, you're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and my guest today is Dr. Washington Hill. He is a maternal and fetal medicine physician who has chaired the department at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. He is an advisory board member for the Healthy Start Coalition in Sarasota and neighboring counties, and they have a conference coming up this Monday. Can you share what the focus of that conference is? What are you all going to be discussing?
Be happy to. Some years ago, we recognized that there was not a good understanding and relationship between patients who had opioid at that time, a problem, the folks who were providing care for those patients during the pregnancy, the medication treatment centers, and the hospital, and the community. And so over the last 6 years in the fall, we've had a conference where we try to bring together anyone who touches the addicted pregnant patient. Anyone. And as you might imagine, if you're pregnant and have an addiction issue, there are many people in the community that you may come in contact with.
Right.
Physicians, hospitals, the police department.
Yes, yeah.
They've been a part. Judges, social workers, DCF. Yeah. All of these individuals may touch the addicted pregnant patient or the pregnant patient with an addiction issue. So we bring them together on one day, and we present subjects that are of interest to them. I'll be talking about some medications that are being used. We have someone from the director of the neonatal nursery that you had mentioned who will be talking about the care of the baby. We'll be talking about the first 1,000 days and their efforts. We'll be talking about domestic violence, and then trauma. And then the other thing that is so important is we talk to the patients. We invite patients or mothers who have been patients, two mothers, to come in and talk to us about their care. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea what they're going to say.
So it's not scripted, huh?
No, definitely not scripted. And they come from the Mother and Infants Program. Usually it's one who is currently pregnant, and then there's one who brings her baby who disrupts the whole day. Could somebody please stop passing around the baby? But seriously, we listen to the patients.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story. I think it was 2 years ago. There was a woman who I invited, or the mother and infants director invited, and she'd had a baby at the hospital. She'd had two. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, so how did things go? And she said, the first time I was there, it was terrible. And I felt stigmatized. People looked at me funny. It was just an unhappy experience. People was asked me, well, you knew you were pregnant. Why were you using drugs in the first place? And I couldn't wait to get out of that place. And then after that, we did a lot of work at the hospital. We have a group called Addiction Support and Pregnant. Pam was very instrumental in making sure that nurses got good information about these patients. Mm-hmm. I and others did as well. And then she got pregnant again. Mm. And she said, oh, my God,
She wasn't excited, huh?
She was not excited. And she, the way she told the story was so moving. Yeah. She said, what am I going to do? Maybe I should have a home birth. And so she said, no, she went back to the hospital. And the way that she shared how well she was taken care of, everyone cried. And I went back to one of the nurses and said, that is what it's all about. So the second time she came, she was able to experience what we in this community have been able to do. Mm. And that is to recognize that addiction is a disease, like diabetes. Dr. Antunes' patients weren't criticized because they had diabetes.
Right.
Hey, you got diabetes. What the heck's wrong with you? No. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true here. This is a disease, and there are ways in which you treat it, including law enforcement. They'll help you and tell you what you should not be doing, and DCF, mm-hmm. and your doctor, and the MAT therapy clinics. So that's what we're going to be doing. It's always a very rewarding day. It will be an opportunity for the community and anyone who is interested to come and find out what we're doing. More information can be obtained, of course, from Healthy Start.
Healthy Start, is it .org?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Okay. You know, one of my takeaways from my career in healthcare sales and pharma sales, we talk about transitions of care and how you can be getting an excellent care in one care setting, but then when the baton moves to maybe it's discharge, maybe you're being discharged to a skilled nursing facility, or maybe it's the transition from the emergency room to the floor, you know? And oftentimes, because there are so many, a pharmacist told me, he was in Port Charlotte, at that time it was Fawcett Memorial, and he was saying, do you know how many things have to happen for a drug to be administered on the floor? How many actions have to take place? And I was like, 10, 5? No, 50. There are just so many discrete moves and decisions that have to be made. So I think it's pretty brilliant to bring in this interdisciplinary approach,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And because it's a fabulous thing for the story about the woman who experienced an amazing care the second time. And then she's going to go home with that baby. I remember the first time I went home I was the oldest of five. I am the oldest of five. So I knew what it was to change a diaper just because I helped my mom. But I remember that feeling of like, oh, wow, I have to go home and take care of this baby now. It's a lot. And so that kind of support, especially if it's hard enough when things are okay for you. But when you're dealing with an addiction, I think it's got to be critical.
It's got to be critical.
Yeah. Okay, and so we're going to take a quick break. Everyone, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
That's so nice. Thank you very much. Am I blue? Am I blue? Ain't these tears in these eyes telling you am I blue? You'd be too.
Welcome back to The Detail. With me today is Dr. Washington Hill, and we're talking about his work with Healthy Start, which is a group dedicated to the health of babies. And it's not just Sarasota County, right?
Right.
Which counties are involved?
Our coalition is four counties. Mm. Sarasota, Manatee, DeSoto, and Charlotte.
Okay. I'm looking at the program. It's a one-day program. It's at the Carlton?
The Carlisle.
The Carlisle.
Lovely hotel. It's up on Beneva.
Okay.
Bay of Vista.
Bay of Vista. And, okay.
It's where the Dutchman is.
Oh, so, alrighty. Yeah.
And they built it some years ago. Mm-hmm. So breakfast is a part of the registration and lunch. So I always say breakfast and lunch will be very good because it's served by Dear Dutchman.
It's by Dear Dutchman. Right. Yeah, and some pretty awesome pie there. So you've got a full day planned, and one of the topics is stigma among pregnant women with opioid use disorder. Can you share something about that?
Dr. Lilly, who is a doctor who works with Operation PAR. I've mentioned several times medication-assisted treatment centers. We call them MAT centers, M-A-T. Mm-hmm. Those centers, there are four of them in Sarasota. And by the way, at those four centers, listeners can get free Narcan. And Narcan is a drug that is used to bring back someone who is overdosed. I would really encourage your listeners to have Narcan in their home, have it in their car. I have it in my car, I have it in my home, because it can save a life.
Yeah.
And you can get it free at any of the four MAT clinics.
Yeah.
So one of which is Operation PAR.
Yeah, because opioid abuse is, maybe it's better, but it's not like it's over.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question that it's not over. There's no question that it. You don't know if a family member is abusing. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. It's not over from the standpoint of the need for the Narcan. We make sure that our patients who have an issue at Sarasota Memorial Hospital go home with Narcan. Okay. So that when they have their discharge instructions, here is your Narcan if you need. And these are high-risk patients, mm-hmm. patients who have been using substances who we know of. So that's very important.
Yeah.
Your question had to do with stigma.
Yeah.
And going back to the young lady who told her story, mm-hmm. when she came in the first time some years ago, the nurses and the doctors and those who took care of her stigmatized her.
Yeah.
You were using drugs, you knew you were pregnant, why are you doing this, et cetera, not realizing that she has a disease.
Yeah.
She has a disease.
Sure, if she could just stop,
it's not
she
like
would,
she,
right?
It's like with diabetes. I got diabetes, I'll just stop taking my insulin today. It's going to go away. My diabetes in the morning doesn't work that way.
Right.
The same thing with substance abuse. It takes a long period of time with counseling, mm-hmm. mat therapy, et cetera. And some of these patients are on their medication-assisted therapy for their life.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that's what they need to function.
Yeah. So that would be something like methadone for the heroin
exactly.
addict.
Methadone, yeah. Operation PAR prescribes methadone.
Mm-hmm.
There are other drugs like Subutex, but these are drugs which help a patient, a mother, a husband, someone mm-hmm. function in our society.
Yeah. How do the babies fare when the mom's getting optimal care, but she has an addiction, and of course there's many substances, and I'm sure that impact the child differently. But what is like the best scenario you can
yes.
hope for?
We'll be talking about that. Dr. Schilling is the director of the NICU at SMH, and she'll be talking about the care of the babies, what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
Very briefly, it can vary. There
yeah.
can be a patient. There can be babies who are in the hospital for a month or more.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are because the mother did not come in for any kind of treatment,
mm-hmm.
but some of those can be from the medication that is used for their treatment and the dose and the size of the baby. All of these factors. So the baby may be there for a month and a half. It's good to look at the data, and the data on the length of stay is getting shorter. Is it because of what we're doing? Is it because the mothers are getting in? Is it because we're using less medication? Is it because when they're in the NICU, there's another way to treat them other than medication, soothing, rocking, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
But that's good. Good to know. So the baby, it's most important for the mother to get care so that the baby will have less trouble after she delivers.
Yeah, yeah. And that stigmatization, because people look at this as a behavior rather than an addiction.
Exactly.
There was an adage that I learned in some of my divinity studies. Don't be arrogant about your obedience, meaning you're kind of following the God's law, right?
Right.
Or, you know,
right.
It's a gift.
Right.
Like, we like to think that we're the cause of everything, right? We like to think that we're always at cause. But the fact is, we don't determine where we were born. We don't determine many things that contribute to who we are. And so for those who are... or who we are in this world, in this life. But for those who have these struggles, I think what I'm asking is, where is the attitude of there but the grace of God go I, right?
I've said that so many times.
Yeah.
And I'm sure whether you're a physician or a business person or just a housewife at home or whoever, there by the grace of God go I.
Yeah.
Because there were choices that you made or did not make
mm-hmm.
that were important in your life.
Yeah. Or, you know, circumstances you were never confronted with, never had to deal with, that other people, it's just part of their world and their walking through the world.
And you're so right. That's why we asked the two young ladies who come, not only about the care that you got in the hospital, but we start off with, tell me your story.
Yeah.
And if anyone who's listening wants to find out why a friend or a colleague or someone is using drugs or on the wrong path or an mm-hmm. alcoholic or using meth or whatever, mm-hmm. ask them in a kind way, would you like to tell me your story? Many of them do.
Yeah.
And when you hear the story, you will come to understand who this person is, and there by the grace of God go I.
Yeah.
First time I heard one of them, I said to the person sitting next to me, it's a miracle that this person is alive in the first place.
Yes.
Because of the trauma. And that's a part of the conference. We'll be talking about trauma, stigmatization,
mm-hmm.
treatment of the mother, treatment of the baby,
mm-hmm.
first 1,000 days. And then also perinatal bereavement. Perinatal bereavement is important because some of these patients have had someone who died during childbirth, or their child might die.
Yeah.
So perinatal bereavement will be discussed as well.
Yeah. You know, back in the day when OxyContin was new and its dangers weren't necessarily fully appreciated.
Right.
Although I think Purdue Pharma totally knew. There's been reporting about how they suppressed information. But I ran into a Purdue Pharma rep in the office of a physician where I have to be careful.
Sure.
I'll just say it didn't make any sense to me why a Purdue Pharma rep promoting OxyContin would be in that office. Just didn't make any sense. They weren't like pain management or maybe an orthopedics, or it wasn't like that. And then later on, I put together that physician was a sports coach. And that physician was probably helping students
right.
who had injuries. And knowing my industry, as right. I did, as I still do, you know, the sophistication of the promotion and the outreach for that medication, which ultimately became so destructive.
Right.
You know, there it was right in front of me. At that time, we didn't appreciate how addictive that drug is. But, you know, this idea that it only happens to certain people, or there's somehow something deficient about you. If you've, I got to say, you know, there is a very well-oiled marketing machine behind that drug. That's not true with cocaine necessarily,
right,
but it
right.
was with.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you look at, I think recently the Supreme Court backed off of the settlement where the family was going to be able to pay and be okay. I mean, I think it's, my take is until people actually go to prison for things like this, because a payment is like the cost of doing business.
Right.
They're still going to get up in the morning, put their pants on and their shoes and
right.
go have their life.
Right.
But when you knowingly harm people and society like this, and even drug distributors who had to have known from their data, I would get this data as a rep. I would see what was happening in the community. When you see that there's a pharmacy out in, you know, a rural area that is going gangbusters, filling prescriptions for right. pain meds.
You got to suspect something's not right.
And we need a system where there's a red flag, a required red flag that says, wait a minute, you know, this is harming the people out there. And we don't have that yet. I don't think we have that yet. But it's programs, I think, like what you're doing that educate everyone. First of all, of course, the mothers and taking care of the mothers, but also raise the level of awareness among professionals in society. Like, there are things we can do,
right?
You know,
and the community.
Yeah, there are things we can do in the community, and this isn't a problem without ways that we can intervene and keep chipping away. So if people want to go to the conference, and you're inviting anyone who's
interested.
Anyone who's interested.
Anyone who's interested.
Okay.
We talked at the beginning, the intent is certainly to reach nurses, physicians, patients, grandmothers, social workers, navigators.
Yeah. So tickets are $75 if you'd like to go. This is Monday, December 16th from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Carlisle Inn and Conference Center. So that's on Bella Vista Street at the corner of Beneva and, is it?
Bella Vista.
Bella Vista, right. Okay. You can call 941-373-7070. That's 941-373-7070. I hope your brother, George, does well.
Thank you.
Today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope he heals well.
Even though he's not the first.
and your mother's stroke of genius in giving you both your names, and it's always, even before I met you, Dr. Hill, I was like, ooh, Washington Hill. Isn't there a historic figure in the United States? Well, that's another show. But I think there's a George Washington Hill out there. So
there's a George Washington Carver.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. The peanut farmer.
Scientist.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thank you for the work you do. Like I said, you could just be, I don't know, playing golf, but here you are.
I don't play golf, but I will keep doing what I'm doing for as long as I can.
All right.
I want to thank you also for always opening your door and to those of us in the community who need a voice to get information out. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Please give my regards to your husband.
I told him. He said to say hi to you too. Yeah, he's enjoying retirement. I mean, you all both worked for a very long time, and it's good to have a bit of a break.
Yeah.
All righty.
Thank you,
everybody. Thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Do make it a great day, and I want to say thank you all so much for supporting this radio station in our recent pledge drive. We all are volunteers here. We work for you, and we so appreciate you working to keep the lights on. Thanks again.
My woman, you go to your man. You made me love you, and you made me cry. That's right. You should remember that you was born to die. You should remember that you was born to die.
host of Democracy Now! You're listening to WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The UN is totally committed to supporting a smooth transition of power with an inclusive political process in which the rights of all minorities will be fully respected and paving the way towards a united, sovereign Syria with its territorial integrity fully reestablished.
The UN Secretary General calls for a united Syria following the toppling of the Assad regime. As celebrations continue in Syria and around the world, many are fearful of what comes next. We'll go to Syria for the latest. Then we speak to Jan Egeland, head of the Norwegian Refugee Council. He's just left war-torn Ukraine.
Every single day, the Russians are attacking Kherson, attacking civilian targets, attacking even aid workers and ambulances. The population is really suffering.
And we'll look at what some are calling Donald Trump's Me Too cabinet. From Pete Hegseth to Linda McMahon to Trump himself, a number of Trump's cabinet picks have been accused of sexual misconduct or of covering up sexual abuse. All that and more coming up.